Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Launch Break is a new inclusive community of athletes who play or played women's sports at the collegiate, national, or professional level. Launch Break is a platform to network professionally, find a mentor, meet for a game or workout, promote your business, prep for the job search, and more. Members include athletes from over 200 universities, numerous professional sports, and national teams. Join for free at launchbreak.com. Welcome to On the Rise, a podcast about female college tennis players on the way up. On the Rise serves compelling stories and unique voices in women's college tennis. This is your host, Perry Scheinen. In this episode of On the Rise, I will be speaking with University of Michigan alum Mira Ruder-Hook, who is a 2016 All-American for the Wolverines. Led by head coach Ronnie Bernstein, Mira earned a top 10 doubles ranking alongside partner Brianne Miner. After graduation, Mira worked at Amazon for 5 years before creating a new venture to support former college athletes. Welcome to another episode of On the Rise podcast. This is your host, Perry Scheinen, and today I'm joined by Mira Ruder-Hook from the University of Michigan Women's Tennis. Mira, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Well, the first moment that I saw your post in Launch Break, by the way, which is a group that all of our listeners should join, either current or former college athletes in any sport. But as soon as I saw your post calling for former athletes to talk about their experience after college, I jumped on that because that is exactly what we do here at On the Rise. So first of all, just wanted to ask you, how are you doing in the years after college tennis?
Oh, wow. It's been quite the ride. But kind of as you're alluding to, I've taken some really exciting steps in the last couple of years to heal myself, to utilize all that I learned from tennis on and off the court, and also give back to the community that has shaped me into the person I am today.
When you were at Michigan, if you were to look at yourself from freshman year to senior year, how do you feel like you evolved most?
I think I just started to kind of find who I wanted to be in the world, again, on and off the court. I had a really clear tennis identity when I came to Michigan and was really clear on wanting to play professional tennis, wanting to have tennis as my top priority while I was there. And I would say that over the course of 4 years, I really started to hone in on, yes, I'm a tennis player, but also I love so many other things. And I felt like I had the unique opportunity to really explore that in a very low stakes environment, to the point where when I left, I had a clearer picture of what I wanted to do, but I also had a picture of, like, I want to do things outside of tennis, and I was really clear on that.
Before this, we talked about the power of networking and really how you took advantage of that as a college student. Can you just talk to me a little bit more about what that experience was like for you?
One of my favorite technologies is LinkedIn, which is like a hot take, to be honest with you. I felt at Michigan that you kind of had to self-advocate. You had to figure out what you wanted to do and be very adamant on reaching out to whoever would help you get there. Just being willing to be uncomfortable, frankly, in like a mass of people. And it just like unlocked this belief within myself that I was just going to reach out to whoever and see where it went.
And I had the same experience in college because we didn't have a journalism program and I knew that I wanted to go into sports media. And so I literally, as you did, we called people outside of our organization. And I cold called so many people who picked up and were kind enough to share their experience. Yeah. And I wasn't even calling them for a job. I was just calling them to ask, how did you do it? How did you get there? And so you got to Amazon right after college, of course, which was the culmination of many years of networking and creating those connections. What was the most surprising thing once you got to this large company?
I think it was just how much it was a startup within a huge company. Amazon is a bunch of little startups. And I honestly think it's a phenomenal way to run the company. And at times it feels like it's right on the brink of like breaking, and things do break, but it is, a remarkable model in reinforcing ownership and reinforcing capability amongst everyone.
Now you're doing something that's in the sports world, but also in that transition period that we talk about here on the podcast. Could you tell me more about this next venture?
I've been getting really interested in the outdoor space. A huge driver of that was actually my own healing journey after playing college tennis. I just felt like there was a lot of things I had not focused on while I was playing tennis, and I wanted and needed the opportunity to focus on those things after I decided not to play professional tennis. So when I was in Seattle, actually, it was a perfect opportunity to start to hike and start to be outdoors. So I just jumped right into it. I mean, I was physical, mentally challenging, but it was also very not competitive, which was ideal for me. And it was very community oriented. So fast forward to now, I've really ramped up kind of my exploration of the outdoors, and I love it. You're carrying all you need on your back, which can be, you know, heavy at times for sure. But at the same time, like, you have everything you need on your back. Like, that is incredibly basic, but also incredibly empowering. From there, I feel like I've been able to see my capability, my own, like, limitlessness within that, to the point where now I quit my job at Amazon and I'm trying full time to recruit athletes, professional, collegiate, or all the above, currently playing athletes, to essentially partake in these outdoor trips as a way to heal post their retirement. And I think it's a really powerful way to learn a new skill or skills while having community where you are. Because essentially I lost a lot of my community once I decided not to play tennis. And I realized that there is a lot of power in having a structured, safe community for you once you leave your sport. And I figured, what better than to offer these backpacking trips for, you know, badass women who have just come out of athletics and are looking for the next thing to do. I'm like, well, let's learn a new skill. Let's get outside.
I mean, that right there, that is on the rise. That is the reason why this podcast was born, was because I was struggling and didn't feel like I had anyone else to talk to about it, really. And then I realized that almost every former college tennis player that I've had on this podcast has talked about the same thing. So I'm just so excited that you're acting on it and creating a physical space for all of these athletes to come together.
No, thank you. I mean, it feels surreal even to me, right? Like, when people ask me, oh, what have you been doing since leaving Amazon? I'm like, oh, you know, but then I'm like, no, I'm like building this thing that I so deeply believe in. And it feels surreal that I get the opportunity to do so and that there's so much interest in it. I mean, honestly, it's hard to believe.
When you were talking to me about tennis, you were saying it's not life or death, but when you're in the outdoors, it could be life or death. How do you handle that danger?
This was a question I got asked when I was having my job interview for being a guide, actually. And I think it's super important. It means nothing to climb a mountain if you don't know the first thing about safety when doing so. And I know that seems incredibly basic, but I think in growing up playing tennis for 15 years, winning was a way our culture operates, right? So then in the outdoors, I felt like that flipped. The truth is, when I backcountry ski, you can die from avalanches. You can die from avalanches while mountaineering. And so if you're not competent in the outdoors and know those risks, you're putting yourself and others at risk. And I really internalize that as a guide, as a leader, and as someone who loves to do all of those things myself, in terms of, like, I need to be really clear on my own skills. If you're not really, really taking safety seriously, I don't think you can really do much in the outdoors.
And like many industries, the outdoor industry, also male dominated. How do you feel as a woman breaking into this space?
There are so many women who are just like unbelievable athletes. And so it's been helpful to have them as reference points, to reach out to them at times, and also to start guiding, to meet other guides. It's really helped me believe in that reality for me and believe that I could do it and that I want to do it. And I think that having the ability to reach out to other women really provides you with the confidence you need sometimes. Like, you're going to run into misogyny, you're going to run into sexualization, you're going to run into microaggressions, and you just have to be aware that there are other people cheering you on and that you're there for a specific reason.
When would you feel more nervous if you were to reflect on your tennis career? When you were 6-all, 3-all in the overall match and it came down to your third set, or if you were outdoors and there was a storm coming and you might feel a little unsafe?
It's a great question. It's funny. It's almost different nerves, right? Like, put into context, much more nervous about the outdoor experience, just because, like, legitimately, there are factors out of your control that could certainly cause harm, right? And I think that will continue to always be much scarier to me. I feel like you can never be prepared enough with all of the things you're constantly managing in the outdoors. I felt like in tennis, for the most part, it's about dealing with your head. But I still felt like in the grand scheme of things, that was such a privilege versus like scary, you know? And I think in the outdoors, it's like, okay, this could cause serious harm. This could be bad for the group I'm in. And I just never want to put people in a position where they're at risk. So I'd be more worried in that scenario.
What does your daily life look like as a guide?
This past summer when I was guiding, I built a bed in my car. So I slept in my car for about 4.5 months and woke up in Mount Shasta, California, which is super, super Northern Cal. The guides lived on this wonderful plot of land right at the base of the mountain, which also was surreal. Usually the backpacking trips are 3 days, or you might be doing some porter work where you're carrying gear for other folks. You might be doing some training exercises. It really ranged, but depending on the time of year, essentially during the summer, where certain mountaineering or backpacking objectives are more common, you'd be helping with something related to that.
How did the teamwork of being on the Michigan team help you as a guide?
So much. Being on a tennis team was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in terms of feeling like we're all there to support each other so deeply and unconditionally. We've worked so hard to get there and we're trying to compete at the highest level. And I learned so much about what it is to be a teammate. How do you support people? How do you create a psychologically safe environment? Why does that matter, right? Like, what are the impacts of good and bad coaching? What are the impacts of being a bad teammate, right? Like, you got to see all of that in real time over 4 years. And I felt like that was something I know I love. I love to be in teams where I can bring out folks' like unique strengths and I can raise those up. That's like my singular objective in life, frankly. And I think in the outdoors, it's just another way to do so.
That is so cool. And talking about excelling in other areas beyond the tennis court, I mean, you were an excellent player. You won nearly 200 matches for the University of Michigan, one of the best teams in the nation. And now you're trying to become such an elite athlete in another space. Do you feel like at times you forget that you were that elite tennis player?
Totally. And I also think I'm constantly navigating what credit to give to tennis. I feel like a lot of folks, especially my partner, has been constantly reminding me. It's like, Mira, you played collegiate tennis. Like, don't forget that. The sport itself, the racket component of it, it's like, I might not do that anymore, but like the tennis player within me is the person I'm showing up as in the outdoors. It's just in a different function.
Very cool. And so when you're in the woods, what do you eat?
So my friend and I, my best friend since I've been 5 years old, I live with her as well in San Diego, which is wonderful. And she and I frequently convene in our kitchen and talk about random things. But we have recently started making grain-free granola called Lady Nuts. And we have several flavors. But in any case, I eat Lady Nuts on the trail because it's wonderful granola. And I personally am a huge granola fan. I could eat it all the time. We've been playing around with a bunch of ways to make it and ways to make it really healthy and low sugar.
Tell me more about how this came to be. Did you two just decide one day that you wanted to start a food brand?
It was incredibly random, actually, as you might guess with a name like Lady Nuts. But let's see. So my friend Sarah is a wonderful baker. She makes everything and it just like wafts through the house and it's wonderful. She made this granola and didn't have oats at one point. She just like didn't have enough. So she made it with just nuts, like a paleo version, essentially. It was wonderful. And we were workshopping like, well, this is great. Like, you could sell this. And she was like, well, we should do it together. And I was like, okay, well, what should we call it? I say nutsack a lot as a way to normalize this term for myself, because unfortunately something sexually traumatic happened. And so I genuinely was scared of ball sacks. So I decided to normalize the term for myself and say it as a term that I use in my day-to-day language. As like, okay, I'm gonna change my definition of a nutsack and it's gonna be my choosing. And so Anyways, nutsacks on the brain for me, usually, right? And so we were talking about, like, okay, nuts, like, grain-free, paleo, and I was like, oh, like, lady nuts, like, yeah. And then we were talking to people in our house and just in our San Diego community, and they're like, this is fantastic. You know, it also raises this, like, sex-positive lens, which Sarah and I are huge advocates for. I mean, it's female-led, female-driven, which, again, means a lot to me. I have two moms, I have two sisters. Like, the female power is very much a story of mine. And so this really embodies a lot of amazing things, unexpectedly, frankly. It's exciting.
First of all, I'm so sorry that you went through that. But the fact that you've been able to turn that in your life into something positive, and now you're going to help other women talk about this, is incredible.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you. And I think, like, for folks that do know me, they know I'm incredibly quirky, to say the least. Like, that probably comes through from this podcast. But, I mean, the fact that I, you know, use ball sack conversationally is a choice, for sure. But it goes back to tennis, like, feeling like you can get through anything. You can reframe things, you can find the positives, and, like, really let it be power for you. Really let it be something that is empowering to you.
Was this something that happened during college?
Actually before. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot to carry into the college space.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting too, because in terms of, like, the healing that I did post-college, a lot of it focused on dating. Like, I hadn't given myself any opportunity to date. I couldn't even wrap my head around that while I was playing tennis, because it I think just, like, triggered a lot of things that I actually needed a lot of time to work through. And I was using, you know, 99% of my energy on tennis and academics and just getting through college, essentially, and the 10,000 majors that I was in. So then I felt like, okay, if I'm not going to do tennis, I'm going to really heal with this. So, like, my first objective when I got out of school was not just dating, but, like, figuring out, like, you know, the things I had suppressed, figuring out how I was going to, you know, move forward and start to explore dating, start to explore this part of myself that I had never spent very much time in.
And were you working with a support system during this time, or were you really on your own?
Well, that, I think, was the great part about having a job right out of college, is I had healthcare, and Amazon gives great benefits, so that was wonderful. I had a therapist in Seattle who was great. I also think, though, I was just ready to talk about it. Like, I was just going to talk about it until I was able to kind of approach things differently. And I think I just kind of bargained with myself that, like, if I'm not doing it now, when, right? It's just going to be a thing that limits me for the rest of my life. And I was not going to have that. It was super scary. And again, differently than tennis at times where, right, like, you're at 6-all, this is a very different type of fear, but it was something I knew I needed to work through, again, to show up in the world as I wanted to. So flipping it into how can it be fun was huge. And that helped me essentially meet a partner who I adore now and have been so happy with for almost a year and a half now, which is wild. But it just, like, reframing things into funny ways is a huge thing for me that I do literally in everything.
And I mean, you have such a positive personality, and I feel like that takes so much strength to just even be positive in that space.
No, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I credit tennis. Like, I think if you've been conditioned for 15 years to really, like, take losses and know that they're, who cares, right? Everyone loses. It's not a function of, like, you're worthless or you're a loser, right? Then I feel like, you know, you can move through a lot, which is really powerful. My name is Mira Ruderhook, and I'm on the rise.
This has been an episode of On the Rise, a Tennis Channel podcast in partnership with Behind the Racket. It's produced by Molly Getman and Lyric Bowditch. Join us next time to continue our conversation about women's college tennis. This is Perry Scheinen, On the Rise.